All right, welcome to another episode of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast. We are recording live from Microsoft Ignite today.
That's where we are.
Yeah, September 27, 2018, if you're listening to this after the fact. In this podcast, we talk all about Office 365, Azure, and the IT Pro and end user side of life. So we're going to discuss different topics, different news each week as it relates to you as an Office 365 Pro or Office 365 as Azure, how it relates to you as an IT Pro. So I am Ben, if you do not know us.
And I am Scott.
And in this episode, we're actually going to be discussing why you as an Office 365 or Microsoft admin, since Office 365 admin, they kind of get interchanged now, should also be familiar with Azure and maybe even be an Azure admin yourself. So yeah, that's the topic.
Let's get started.
All right. So where do you want to start with?
I think one of the interesting things this week was we saw the Microsoft 365 Admin Center kind of come out and blow up a little bit. So it's a nice unified landing page. I think one of the interesting things that's happened over time doing a lot of Azure is I tend to start off in the Azure portal and do everything there because most of the services manifest themselves, users, groups, licensing, entitlements, whatever it happens to be. And then you have this whole other lens where you can go in on the other side and say kind of one-stop shopping for just admin.microsoft.com and then have that launching point to not only the Azure constructs that we're going to talk about that drive you through, but also your Office 365 workloads. So Exchange Online, Skype for Business, the Teams and Skype Admin Center, you know, Yammer if you happen to use that thing, whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the big things was talking about the Microsoft 365 Admin Center and how that is that new starting point. It's not just the Office 365 Admin Center anymore. It's all things Microsoft. And with that, it also lights up some additional features, some additional roads into Azure, where some of these
just a few
Azure services live. So the first one, when it all gets started, and I'm still surprised by the number of people I talk to that don't realize this, is when they spin up an Office 365 environment, they get Azure AD. So they're already onboarded into Azure by creating Office 365. So kind of that first area that every Office 365 admin, everybody that has Office 365 should be aware of is that you have Azure because you have Azure AD. And there is a lot of stuff just right in Azure AD that you need to be familiar with as you get started with Office 365.
Yeah, so you've got a couple of things there. You can launch in from the Microsoft 365 Admin Center. You could always go to portal.azure.com, like if you're a commercial cloud user, and find Azure Active Directory in the list of Azure services. There's also a dedicated URL, which takes you into a subset of the blades directly inside the Azure portal. So you can access that at aad.portal.azure.com, so Azure Active Directory.portal.azure.com, and that will drive you into that experience as well. So depending on how you get there, it can look a little bit differently. If you're just an Office 365 subscriber, you're effectively in a customized SKU of Azure AD. There's kind of four tiers or four SKUs in there today. So you're in the Office 365, Office 365 app SKU. So it might be a little bit subset of it. But then you can take that directory and spin it up into Azure subscriptions because AD is a tenant level service. And then we have subscriptions for things like Azure or Office 365 that sit underneath that. So we can go spin up a bunch of Azure subscriptions, whatever it happens to be. As long as you're logged in, you have the licensing. Doesn't matter what it is, whether it's the Office 365 apps licensing or you are a EMS subscriber and you come through and maybe you have like an EMS E3 or an E5 when come across as P1 or P2, however that manifests itself, you'll actually end up most of the time in the Azure portal to go ahead and configure that functionality. So there's some new things that were announced this week that are going to drive not just admin experience, but also end user experience when it comes to things like Azure Active Directory. So in the keynote on Monday, they announced that passwordless sign-in is now available for organizational or work identities. So kind of our Contoso or Fabricam.com identities to drive those through. That functionality has been there for MSAs or Microsoft accounts for, a few months now and kind of sitting and hanging out there. So for those that heard that announcement, maybe they've used it with MSAs and they want to get hands-on with it, touch it, maybe try it within your tenancy. There's actually a couple prerequisites that come into play and need to be dealt with. So you do need to light up that functionality very specifically within your Azure Active Directory tenant. And that's going to be done with some PowerShell. And it's going to require someone who has access to the Azure Active Directory V2 or the graph commandlets. So like the Azure AD commandlets for PowerShell. And then you're also going to need to be a global admin or a security admin to go ahead and light that feature up. A little bit of PowerShell, you'll go ahead and basically enable, it's kind of like an app auth, like authenticator authorization at the tenant level. And then it's automatically lit up for all the users inside that tenancy. So your users at that point, they're kind of all set and ready to go and get that feature. They will not have that feature unless they have MFA as well. So you still have a bunch of prerequisites if your users aren't onboarded in MFA, whether you're kind of coming through Azure MFA or you're doing Office 365 MFA, yep, whatever it happens to be. So, you know, you got to take your users, get them onboarded. They all need to go through MFA setup. So that's just aka.ms/MFA setup and walk through both enrollment and registration into the MFA service. And then after you've lit up the PowerShell on the admin side, if you're not confused yet, then your users can go ahead and consume that within the app. They can get push notifications to Apple Watch if they happen to do that, Android, iOS. It's all sitting out there and ready to go.
Yeah.
Mover is a cloud migration company that specializes in moving your company's files from file servers or cloud storage like Box, Dropbox, and Google into Office 365. Their patented technology makes Mover the fastest OneDrive file migrator in the world. Moving dozens of terabytes of data a day is a breeze. Use Mover's free, industry-leading migration guides or ask for a managed migration and they'll take the lead. With Mover, all your data is secure and intact, running completely behind the scenes. You don't lose time, money, or hair while you transfer. Scan, plan, migrate, report. Migrations that don't suck with Mover. Visit mover.io for more info.
This is the feature I'm looking forward to. I haven't had a chance to light it up yet in my tenant, but it will be nice to be able to have that to start getting rid of those pesky passwords.
It's interesting, and it drives some new behaviors for users. So maybe for organizations that have longer passwords, it gives you some options to reach out and say, you know, hey, we're going to give you potentially an easier way to onboard and do this. It's really slick if you are a cloud-only organization, and it works really well in that, right? Like we would just go in, light up the PowerShell on the Azure Active Directory tenant, users come in, onboarded MFA, registered, everything just kind of works. So that's the easiest path forward. Realistically, not everyone is cloud only. You know, most enterprises are going to have some form of federation in place. You might use ADFS or Ping Federate or Okta, something else that sits external. So you're kind of doing SAML federation. It's a little bit different there because if you think about a SAML flow where a user gets directed to Azure Active Directory, login.microsoftonline.com, and then we see they're federated, they go through home realm discovery, and they get bounced back to that service. Normally, that's kind of a one-step flow for the users once they've been through HRD. Yep. It's a little bit different once you inject this service because it sits on the top of it, and it's a gate through Azure AD and conditional access and everything else. So it stops you, and it says, how do you want to log in? I see you're a federated user. You're going to have to use a password, and you have to click a button that says, yes, I want to use a password so I can go all the way back to my federated identity provider, get my token from there, relying party, and kind of be passed through auth flow. So that's not ideal. Like you might want to light this feature up and kind of have users be able to pick or choose what's going on and when they're going to be driven into those types of experiences. You can still do IDP initiated smart links for things like HRD and force everybody in. Or in the case of something like ADFS, you can actually pass a login hint as part of the query string and provide that through. You'll do HRD and just kind of skip straight out. And when you have the login hint in there, AD is smart enough to say, I'm not going to drive you through that conditional access flow where you have to click the little button and go to the next step.
Yep. So another one of the features too that is in Azure that you can light up, again, it depends on your licensing, is Intune. So this is, you can either get to it a few different ways. Some of the access to Intune lives in Azure AD, so like some of the links to conditional access.
Yep.
or the Intune portal itself now is in Azure AD. So when you start looking at Intune, conditional access, mobile device management, mobile application management, all for that Office 365 tenant, that is also all going to be in Azure for managing Office 365. And there's a lot of cool features here. One of the new ones is those security baselines in Intune to make sure that all your global admins now have MFA enabled by default, help secure it that way. I know there's a bunch of changes coming to even conditional access. They keep rolling out more and more options.
So there's a couple of interesting things there. So that baseline policy you mentioned is a user-based policy. So that's going to be centered around people. Intune also allows you to do device registration, right? It's an MDR, mobile device registry, and can push all that through. So what they've done is they've taken the same kinds of constructs that exist for users, or realistically, when we think about like devices, we probably protect those with like baselines with group policy or GPOs, and being able to have quick ways to onboard devices into Intune and then apply baseline policy to those. So there's going to be a set of best practices that are driven out of that experience, and then customers can go in and either roll them out as is and kind of have the baseline for not just user, but also device registration. So we onboard, register the device, and some form of policy is pushed straight down. Or you can customize those and kind of pitch them out to wherever you need them to be. The other thing they did there, because you mentioned conditional access, is conditional access has a bunch of controls around devices. So if you think about driving an authentication flow from a device, like I'm on a Windows 10 laptop, or you on your Mac, typically, if we go through device registration, we want to see some form of compliance. Are you registered? Do you have the features we're looking for? Are you AD hybrid and device joined, whatever it happens to be? So there's a conditional access policy that's part of identity protection for users today, which drives risk-based conditional access. So I can say, I see a user logging in Orlando, and I'm seeing a login from Eastern Europe at the same time. That's an abnormal behavior. You shouldn't be able to log in from these two very geographically dispersed locations at the same time. So that's a high risk thing.
Yep.
So maybe we want to do conditional MFA and pass that up.
So one of the other things too around conditional access is, and I didn't even realize this until I started playing with it, is if you go into like the SharePoint Admin Center in Office 365 and turn on some of the conditions there, it's like a GUI version in the SharePoint Admin Center and the Office 365 Admin Center for allowing or disallowing certain access to SharePoint. All that actually really does is go spin up a couple conditional access policies in Intune in Azure AD. So even if you want to tweak kind of what you get out of the box with that conditional access through the SharePoint Admin Center, the OneDrive Admin Center, under the covers, it's all just Azure AD and those conditional access policies.
Yeah, one of the interesting things that's starting to happen is with particularly Intune and Azure AD and device registration is we start to look at devices as an extension of users and kind of tie those in. So when you go into Windows and you tie your identity to your device and it registers, now we can do some interesting things with it. So for conditional access for a device, I want to see if it's compliant. If it's not compliant, I don't want it to log in. And that's kind of how it's been up until some announcements this week. What they've done is they've added a conditional access policy for devices, and you can do risk-based device sign-in as well. So when you're driving that authentication flow for a user, I want to know who the user is and the device they come from and drive MFA or some other construct that way. Now I can take a device and it was compliant. Say it gets malware, it has some type of virus, something like that on it. Intune will pick that up, push that telemetry back to the cloud service, and it will dynamically mark that device as non-compliant. So you don't have to change any of the existing conditional access policies. The devices automatically pick them up and drive them through. So now I can do risk-based sign-in for users and devices, just users, just devices, or any combination of the two in between, which is really super slick.
Yeah, that's really nice. That'll be very nice to be able to do some of that device-based conditional access and not just the user stuff.
Yeah. Like I said, you can do it today, but this is 100% dynamic. So drive the flow for compliance and non-compliance for a device through Intune and that risk-based assessment.
Hi, I'm Steve Peschke, and I'm one of the founders at Office365Mon.com. I worked at Microsoft for over 18 years, and one of the most common questions I got is, how do I know what's going on with the health of my Office 365 tenant? When there's a problem with your tenant, you need to know what's going on before your users. We help you understand not only when your tenant goes down, but how well it's performing. When you do have a problem, where do you start looking? Is it your network? Is it your tenant? Is it some feature inside of Office 365? Our network analysis features can pinpoint performance issues and help you figure out where those bottlenecks are. Sign up for a free 90-day trial today at office365mon.com. Stay in the know and stay in control with office365mon.com.
So another one that just lit up and kind of takes you over into Azure is some of the advanced threat protection stuff. Mm-hmm. So this is another aspect of Office 365, Microsoft 365. I still get confused about what terminology you're supposed to use when.
Yes, this is AATP.
Yes.
Not to be confused with the other ATP or any of those. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and this actually lets you do some of that advanced threat protection, both for protecting cloud and on-premises workstations. So this takes you to a brand new portal where you can connect to your on-prem Active Directory. You can register, install the, I think they call it, you put the signal on it. I don't think it's actually called an agent.
Yeah, you're starting to see this kind of single pane of glass experience to come to a lot of these hybrid scenarios. So for something like AATP, where we're potentially protecting on-premises workloads, and then we have cloud app security, which sits up, you know, in the cloud service, pure cloud. Now you've got a new unified dashboard for those, and you can start to drive your operations around security in some different ways. So what they've done is they've extended kind of cloud app security to say, let's be able to go ahead and see that risk again. So I want to understand that an event happened, and then maybe tie that back into on-prem devices because, hey, you know, I've got this device, we've got servers or whatever it happens to be, and then drive priority around investigation. So being able to not only say, hey, Ben logged in, let me go ahead from like a security operations or like SecOps or like, you know, you've got whatever it happens to be, somebody in the Nox sees something flagged. Let's drive the event, be able to go back and do RCA. And what the service is doing is it's lifting prioritization out of that. So it's kind of saying like, hey, this was really bad. This was bad, but it's not as bad. So go look at this first. And then as you're doing that, it's walking you down a little bit of a decision tree to go ahead and enable things like conditional access policies with risk-based sign-in. So let's go ahead and remediate the problem very quickly from a just access and you know what our exposure is and what that looks like and what the kind of the surface area is. We'll continue to do RCA and then be able to lift that very easily from the other side as well.
Yeah, and you mentioned cloud app security.
That's, I did.
Yes, you did. And that's another one of those. As you, as an Office 365 admin, again, I've used the Unified Audit Log a lot. That gives you a lot of stuff that's going on in Office 365. Leveraging cloud app security in Azure also lets you tie into other services to also monitor, hey, what's going on within my environment across some of these other services, whether you are using Okta for authentication, or maybe you guys are leveraging Dropbox or Amazon Web Services, you can actually tie these other services into your cloud app security where you're getting real-time session controls monitoring of Office 365, of the on-premises apps, like you mentioned, but then also some other services you may be using if you are using Okta for your authentication or leveraging Dropbox for something within your company. That's just another one of those Azure services that it's kind of a service that bridges that gap that's kind of Azure, kind of Office 365 that you really should be aware of and take advantage of if you're using some of these other services.
Yeah, I mean, it's really nice. Gives you telemetry, helps you understand what users are using, right? So as we talk about this transition from, hey, Office 365, I need to know Azure stuff, you know, your job changes a little bit. You're in the cloud.
Yep.
So you're not touching the server anymore. So I should have a little bit more time to go out and understand what my users are doing. So tooling like Cloud App Security, it's really great for understanding usage within an organization. You know, I've got an end user campaign where we're going to light up OneDrive. All right, so that's awesome. But you might have business units that have already kind of gone out, or they work with external organizations and they're using Box and Dropbox. And no, they haven't paid for it, but they're definitely accessing it. They're going through your proxies maybe. You really can't block it. Like, you just want to understand that stuff.
Yep.
Cloud app security and some of the controls that come with that are great for learning and then being able to apply practical controls to a device level to go ahead and lock those down, whether those devices are on your network or off your network. I don't know what that device
exactly.
is.
Exactly. I don't either. Apparently, we just break devices when we sit up here.
Yeah. So, you know, we got a couple minutes left. There were a couple other things that were announced this week. So Windows Virtual Desktop is going to be a new Azure service that's coming down. Allows you to provision virtual machines into either new or existing VNets or virtual networks within Azure and deploy multiple types of desktops to your users for access through remote apps or full VDI, like first-party kind of Microsoft VDI. So there's going to be experiences for Windows 10 desktops, so Windows 10 client running in Azure, that are optimized for Office 365 Pro Plus or Click to Run and C2R. And these are full desktops, so you'll be able to apply GPO to them. You'll be able to drive imaging and installation or whatever you want that to look like on your side. You can use the images that are there. You can bring your own if you have hybrid connectivity with ExpressRoute. You can do domain join. Users can access with their credentials and access those services. Because it all sits in Azure and the cloud's all about elasticity, so we've got this awesome concept of horizontal scale or kind of spin up and spin down. You can do the same things within that service as well. So I need 100 desktops now. I only need 10 later in the day and be able to have that flexibility, all leveraging your existing licensing. So to bring it back to M365, that includes a Windows CAL in it. So you don't need to do an additional desktop CAL for a user for that device that they're just using that's hosted up in the cloud. They can get to it from RDP. They can do remote app. So if they're on Mac and, you know, they just need to run Excel in a remote app session, awesome. And you have connectivity from iOS and tablets and Android and all that good stuff as well.
Yeah, this was really interesting. I actually really liked this one too for that reason. It's, you know what, sometimes maybe you don't want to allow users to be able to access your Office 365 environment from home. You don't want them to be able to use your home, their home device, their installation of Office at home. But when they are at home, you want to be able to allow them to work. If you lock them down to just the browser, maybe the web version of Excel, Office aren't good enough. You spin up some of these virtual desktops now, allow them to connect to this virtual desktop from home. They bring their license. Because like you said, when you get into this whole Microsoft 365 world, Office 365 world, because the license is now tied to the user and not to the device, they can use that for this VDI session. You can leverage your existing reserved instances for VMs if you're doing that in Azure.
Yep. No double dipping on CALs or anything like that.
Yeah, exactly.
If folks saw the announcement, it was a little kind of first party. So driven through from a, hey, leverage Windows 10, it's optimized, do Pro Plus. These are virtual machines in Azure. So if you want to run your own workloads through this service, kind of desktop as a service, it's yours. It can join your VNets. It can be on your network. It can be on your domain. It can have all the connectivity and controls that you want, just as kind of a managed service for being able to manage the underlying compute. So that's really cool, because now I can use reserved instances for my compute behind those machines and be able to drive those experiences that way as well.
Yeah, exactly.
It's coming out. You can kind of go out and sign up for a preview now. So there's a form everybody can fill out. And the target for that right now looks to be towards, you know, the end of this year, like November, December, to start pushing it out more in like public preview and for customer consumption. So you could build like RDS gateways and RD web farms and things today. This is all just managed service, so it's all smooth through for you.
You got it. That's what I was going to say, that it's not out today. But I went and signed up for the preview already. As you can see, I'm
for all those VMs that you run just for yourself?
Yes, well, I do. I have a whole bunch of Windows 10 VMs in Azure, and because I'm on a Mac, and sometimes, let's face it, I actually still use SharePoint Designer every once in a while. So yeah, I want to try it.
Cool.
When it comes to email, Outlook and Office 365 are fantastic. But sometimes there are things you'd like to do that aren't implemented. Sperry Software creates Outlook add-ins and Office 365 services that fill in these gaps. For instance, There are Outlook add-ins to automatically print emails and/or attachments, save emails to PDF, send out recurring emails, or how about a warning when you're going to do a reply to all instead of a normal reply? Find these and many more email productivity solutions. Get started today by visiting www.sperrysoftware.com/cloudIT.
So another one is Azure Information Protection. This is another one that they had some announcements this week too around some more capabilities around unified labeling and policies for some of this classification, both across Azure Information Protection and Office 365.
Yes. So you're looking at a little bit of a kind of, again, single pane of glass, unified consumption there.
Because depending on some of your licensing, too, you can have Azure Information Protection go out and crawl some of those. I think you can go out and crawl some of your on-prem file shares. You can absorb content from other places too. For some of those information protection policies, now you combine that with Office 365 with stuff that's sitting in SharePoint, OneDrive, Exchange, kind of bringing Azure and Office 365 together into that Azure Information Protection umbrella.
This is all about being able to do additional classifications that you might not have today. So if you think about AIP or realistically things like Azure Rights Management Service or RMS, like ARMS, you're driven into protecting documents or kind of these, call them like physical objects or physical constructs, right? Like files, folders, things
emails,
we touch.
Yes, exactly.
So I want to have a policy associated with a specific type of document. Gets sent outside my org. Nobody can print it. Nobody can open it. It's encrypted. So some of these new like AIP labels and sensitivity labels let you do automated classification for things like SharePoint sites. So rather than having to label a document library and go in and say, hey, I'm going to light up AIP and RMS for this, let me have a classification and an automated policy and labeling system that's pushed down to those sites as they're spun up. So now it's the whole site that's protected, and then you can potentially drive label or policy depending on what you want to do within it.
Did you see the interview? Did you watch the interview with Alex yesterday with AC and CJ?
No.
Did you get a chance? So I watched that, and it sounds like from something Alex said that you're even going to be able to take these policies and apply these policies to conditional access. So you can do conditional access based on the labels in AIP. So if you have financial or super classified documents, you now go ahead and apply conditional access policies to specific types of documents so that they can't be shared, these conditional access policies.
It depends on the experience and how you're driven through. There's a difference between saying, I'm going to send somebody a link to a document in OneDrive, and I can gate that authentication and authorization experience through Azure Active Directory, because that's the identity provider. There's another thing where I attach the document to an email, or I copy and paste it, put it on my desktop, put it on a flash drive, things like that. So you kind of decide the level that you need protection at. So we're going to manage the depth. Do I need it just really high level? Do I need to be super granular and down at the document level, or do I need to be both? And then go ahead and configure labels and policies to drive from there.
Yeah, so we've got a few others. As typical, we have a whole bunch of stuff we could talk about. One other interesting one that I wanted to hit on, since we do have a few minutes left, was some of this stuff between Flow and Logic apps. So I had an interesting conversation about this with a client a few weeks back.
Like trying to decide when to use which one?
Right, trying to use which one, because Flow is built on Logic App. So
Sort of,
yeah. Under the covers, they're very similar, but they have some different challenges. So Flow is very easy for your end users to go into a document library, create a flow, and spin it up nice and easy. Logic Apps lives in Azure. It requires you to have access to the Azure portal, build your Logic App in Azure. But then you start getting into, okay, so if I create a flow, me as the owner of that flow is the only one that has rights to it by default.
Yep.
So I leave, I go away somewhere. You could have like these ghost,
unless it was a team flow.
Right, unless it's a team flow. But even to get it to a team flow, you have to go in and add somebody else to it.
Yep.
And then it kind of automatically converts it to a team flow, whether that's a user or a group. But if I don't ever do that as a user, and I leave some ghost flow out there running, it can be really weird to try to figure out what's going on, figure out what happened to that flow, all of that. Where with Logic Apps, because it's at that Azure level, you can actually assign people to it right off the bat. You can take over that Logic App when somebody leaves. So it was hey, if it's going to be a flow, if it's just one person creating it, a one-off flow, okay, great. But if this is going to be something and that we're going to rely on as an organization, something like maybe it's provisioning groups or teams in Office 365 or one of those enterprise-wide features, maybe we should actually make this a logic app so that that permission, that access to it is governed at more of that higher level and you don't always have to remember to assign users or turn it into that team flow.
There's a bunch of things that go into those two services. So Logic Apps is a core component of Azure App Service. So it's kind of like one of those four pillars of the app service. So the consumption model for both of these is very different. You know, flow is kind of user entitlement, user right. licensing, you're
so
gated,
many runs
get
per
so
month.
Many runs, and then there's different flow plans and things like that. Logic Apps is gated into more of kind of a consumption-based service, and it's effectively like an enterprise service bus that's, you know, sitting inside of that inside of App Service. It is a little bit different when it comes to connectors. There's connectors
yes.
that are in Flow that don't exist in Logic Apps and vice versa. The provisioning model is different. I've seen some really complex flows that tend to be really declarative. Logic Apps is almost 100% declarative when you kind of want it to get anything and distill it down and really have it run. It's about deciding kind of the right surface and understanding your requirements for what you're going to do. So if you can get the features and functionality out of a flow, you know, 9 times out of 10, I'd probably encourage you to go to flow, because if you're in Office 365 and you have the licensing, it's going to be free for you effectively
yep.
versus going over to Azure and having to consume a service with a cost associated with it. It could be minimal cost, but it still has
it
a
still
cost.
Must have that cost.
So that's the fun part about doing kind of cloud architecture these days, is you have all these, you know, kind of mix and match components, right? We get to play with Legos every single day and talk about the requirements and drive you in from there. And it's not the end of the world to go from one to the other. And you've just got to decide where you drive that experience.
Yep. And those flows too, you can export them, turn them into Logic Apps.
Sort of. Again, depends on what they do and what you've consumed. And how that comes together. But if you're going to connect to a bunch of Azure services, or I want to drive a Logic App and a function and maybe have it called from Azure Automation with like a PowerShell runbook, like a workflow runbook, that all probably makes sense to kind of live together, right? And have it in the same ecosystem and driven through. Or if I'm just pure O365, I might want to just consume over there. It might make sense for the model.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a few topics. Well, we probably had 6 or 7 of them in there of, again, why you as an Office 365, yeah. Microsoft 365 admin, just all those different ways that it ties into Azure and why you should be familiar with Azure, what the capabilities are in Azure, and all of that. So I think that about wraps up our live episode from Ignite.
That's another one.
All right, thanks, Ben. Go enjoy the rest of the conference, and we'll talk to you again later.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.